The pop film, roll 41. Roll 41, the pop film.
Help me, Kevin.
Alright?
Yes.
1, 3, 5, take one. Okay?
Yeah.
I want to start by talking about what happened tonight. Could you just describe what happened tonight and say whether that kind of sort of feelings you had about it?
Well, like, that was the first time we ever used that PA, you know. It's the first time we ever used it, and it completely went out. Soon, you know, we didn't get a chance to sing any songs really decent. And it really was a drag, because I couldn't hear myself sing. I don't know, plus I couldn't get in tune so good, you know. But we still got another show to go, so it'll be all right.
Does that kind of thing happen often?
Not too much. Most of the time it's the amplifier blowing up, or, you know, something popping, or something giving way.
What sort of equipment troubles do you have? I mean...
Well, it's like, we play very loud, you know. Not necessarily loud, but it's very... We try to get a heavy sound, since there's only three of us, you know, and we, like, tend to put the amps through the changes, a lot of changes, you know, and they just can't take it sometimes. So we're getting some special ones made up. But, you know.
Why do you want to play so loud?
Well, it's just, you know, not necessarily loud. It's just a certain feeling you get from playing at certain volumes. Like, all of our songs wasn't the same volume, you know. Like, I think we did The Wind Cries Mary or something like that. Yeah, so then we dropped the volume according to the song.
So when you go down, so, you know, the dynamics are shown more.
Yeah.
It's just an awful drag when playing in the studio, and, you know, especially about equipment. Because, like, you know, we've really got to sort of enjoy ourselves on stage so that people can take it from there, you know, if things go wrong like that.
Every description of my read of your music is always describes it as blues music.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah, I know. So clarify it for me, Jimmy. Talk about the fact that it's always described as blues music and your reactions to that. Well, soul music.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm with you, but I mean, let's put it right.
Everybody say yes.
Yes.
No.
Everybody say, do you feel all right?
Plastic.
Yes, I feel all right. Look out. That's little 66. Man, I can't say nothing about our music, but I know it isn't classified. I don't consider it as R&B, like top 40 rhythm and blues. I don't consider it as strictly blues, you know, itself. Like Noel digs rock, and it comes through, you know, straight English rock, like, it's very hard. And Mitch is, like, on a jazz kick, like, you know, Elvin Jones and so forth. And I like blues myself, you know, but I like all kinds of music, and it just comes out some kind of way, but I wouldn't call it blues. It's best not to call it anything, because, you know,
it's just us, you know.
Yeah, it's best not to.
Very different.
Because when you get yourself uptight and you get us uptight, trying to play what you think that we're.
All right, well, to somebody who's never heard it, how would you describe it?
To someone to come to the gig and dig it. I tell her there'd probably be a few feedback notes here and there, and I might.
It's like, asking how do you describe, you know, Picasso or something. How do you describe Einstein?
I mean, I agree with it, it's just that it always is, every description you read it.
Yeah, but that's it, you know, people shouldn't bother about that in the first place, you know. People always want to tie things up in little packages.
Yeah, that's the soft machine, they know.
When we're talking once to Mick Jagger, he said he thought that all pop music had a soul beat.
Yeah, but the word soul itself is misused so much, it's, you know, it sounds so silly to use it now. It's hardly, you know, you have to scrape around in your drawer and find a new word, you know, and, you know, call it that. But everything has a feeling to it, you know, and a meaning. Like, we mean what we're trying to do. We mean it really, at least, you know, don't you really mean your music? I can really dig it, you know. But not, no, I wouldn't label it like soul or this or that. It's really a bad scene when you do that. Because you might not want to feel like playing that type of thing that you're labeled, you know, all the time.
To tell the truth, you know, a lot of it really isn't about music anyway. It's, you know, all of it's about emotion. It depends how you feel at that particular time, because, I mean, you never do the same, you do the same numbers maybe every night, but you never do them the same twice. Yeah, it just depends how you feel at that particular time. What comes out.
Yes.
What kind of things do you want to get across when you're playing
music?
I don't know that you want to put anything across, you know. People have got to take what they can, what they see, you know. It's like, as I was saying before, you know, in order for us to excite other people, like, we've got to enjoy ourselves. If people see that we're doing what we're doing, well, they can take it from there. It seems a selfish sort of attitude, but that's the truth, you know.
Yeah, we just got thrown together, man, you know, we just got thrown together, and we got a group together, and we started playing.
Can you describe how you came together?
Oh, yeah, well, like, we was having, like, what you call a jam session in England, because Chess had a lot of telephone numbers, so we called up a few people. Mitch is some of the people that came down. I can't see you because the light's on. Someone was just...
saying no. Oh,
sorry.
Beg your pardon.
Oh, above the wire, man.
And like you know, it's like we dug a sound that we was. Oh man, what's all this?
Go from the beginning.
Well, anyway, like we got Chess. Soon as I came to England, Chess made a few phone calls, and a few people came down, like for a jam session, would you call it? And like Mitch is one of some of the people that came down. Noel was one of them. He came down with the guitar. We asked. And of course, could he play bass? He's never touched one before, so he started playing then. And, you know, and I dug away Mitch's playing, so we all got together like that. And like, man, you know, we're not trying to prove anything. Like, every single song is its own type of song. You can't take a bunch of it and slap it in one big barrel and say, well, this is Blah, or this is Wolf, you know. Look. It's never seen like that, you know. It's like we just play, man, you know, like anybody else is doing. There's nothing, you know.
It's just that, you know, you basically get tired. Working in for other people after a few minutes, you know, you just
want to
do your
thing. I'm going to ask you some questions in a minute. I'm going to stay with Jimmy for a minute. I'm going to work systematically around so you don't lose the sound. Jimmy, can you say what things do you think you've gained by you three playing together that you didn't have before?
Well, it's a completely different sound than all of us had playing separate or in other groups, and which is interesting to try to play with or create, you know, see if you can get something out of it. Like it's at the very beginning now, you know, we're just starting up. We've only been together, what, it's about 15 months. And it takes time, really, you know, but like we're feeling each other out, finding each other out. Like we get tired, quite naturally anybody will get tired of playing Purple Haze or, you know, something like that every single night. So quite naturally we mess around with it a little bit according to how we feel. If we feel down or something, you know, regardless of the audience reaction, we just go on and play it straight. You know, so it seemed like that.
How much does the audience affect you? I mean, you're a marvelous performer. And, I mean, you can shift the audience left, right, and centre, as you know. I mean, how important is the audience to you? And what can you do to the audience and what you're trying to do?
Well, like, sometimes, half the time, like on this tour we're on now, you can hardly see the audience, you know, except maybe about the first 10 rows, you know. And so, I mean, what do you have to work with? So the best thing you can do is just go on and play the way you feel, you know. Play the way you feel. Quite naturally, the audience goes, hooray, clap, clap, clap. Quite naturally, you're gonna, you know, that's gonna give you some kind of inspiration, you know. But like, if they're just gonna sit there like mud or plaster or whatever, you know, and just go on and play the way you feel, regardless, you know. I don't think we play according to audience reaction, except maybe on the good reaction side of it. All we do is to say, like, if they're gonna boo, well, as long as they boo in key, it's all right with us. On the stage.
But I mean, do you try to excite them? Do you try to excite them?
Oh, well, sometimes it all depends on. No, man, sex is the farthest thing from my mind, you know. When we're playing. Sometimes, I've seen a few films that we did once, so it was too much. Oh, wow, I didn't know we was going through all that, you know. But I still just played the way I feel at a particular time. Like a certain note, you might have to squeeze it out a certain way, you know.
We can still hear you talking. So, I mean, you don't want to excite, when you saw yourself.
Yeah, quite naturally you want to excite people. I mean, like, you know, but you can't let that interfere. You can't let your whole performance, like, strictly entertaining the people themselves. You can't just throw your whole life for that, you know, 45 minutes, right, they say, here I am, take me, or something like that. You can't do that. You have to have something for yourself. That's what you're playing for. That's what your music is. I can't express myself in a, you know, conversation. I can't explain myself like this or that sometimes because, you know, this doesn't come out like that. So, excuse me, when we're on stage, it's all in the world. That's your whole life right there. You know, it's like playing. Not necessarily giving this note over this section, giving that note and this. I think I'll tease that girl over there. So, you know, I do that because I feel like doing it. You know, I might do it to a cat because I, you know, can't see that quick. I just point to the audience as a whole, maybe, or so forth and so on. But it's no seem like working according to the audience, for sure.
Could you go on a bit more? Very good.
Hello.
Right?
Hi, welcome.
136, take one. Okay. Go on to talk about it being a whole life when you go on stage. I mean, a means of expression.
Well, like, just, like I probably had to start, like, okay, like, when I got out of the Army, I was very interested in the music, you know, like I always have been all through my life. Like, playing between different groups and sitting in here and there. And like when you sit in, like you're traveling all over the country, you don't have no group, you're sitting in and you get a chance to express yourself, so you know, you really can do it. And like, let's start playing behind groups, what they call top 40 R&B, rhythm and blues groups, Little Richard, Isaac Brothers, so forth and so on. And I was a backing musician, and it was really getting to be a hang-up, because like, I might have an idea for a song, you know, you might get tired of playing the same old song over and over, might have an idea, you know, and they said, no man, you have to have it exactly right, you have to do steps, you're wearing patent leather shoes, plus hairdo to match, you know. And really everybody looks like, you know, completely alike. And it was really getting to be a hang-up, so I went to Village, Chess, you know, and all the thing, you know, I got my own group together. And like, playing on stage is the only kind of way you can express yourself, really, for me anyway. Because when you get into deep conversations, like they say, well, what kind of person are you? Oh, well, how can you ask them that, you know? Like, what was it? I could change about 20 times. That's because, like, you're constantly thinking of music. I am, you know, all the time I'm creating it. And because it's part of my life so much that everything I do is what it has to do with music. It's very, very serious to me, you know? And like stage appearance, like far as, like they say, all this too erotic and sex and all this, I don't think of it at all, completely in that basis. I think of it as just another way of pushing that note out, or that certain feeling or sound, or that, you know, that certain life for that second out. You know, I just can't help it. That's just the way it happens for me.
When you get on the stage, are you aware of that sort of experience happening, or does it just happen?
What is that? You mean like what the people are going to think?
Yeah, like.
Well, no. Well, like, it's like us being born. Every time we go on stage, it might be bad or it might be good. We don't know. You know. Well, we go on, not necessarily scared, but I'm just thinking in my mind how, you know, what we play first and what should we do second. We never do call for songs in order. We, you know, we just play it exactly the way we feel. This goes long, long. If no one wants to take off his jacket, just stop. Wait a minute, hold on. You know, between songs, take his jacket off, get really comfortable and get into it, you know. And therefore, like, we play around with a lot of our songs a lot, because you get very bored. And especially something, like, as I said before, music is a top in my whole life. Something that's serious. Well, you know, it's. I keep saying that over and over again, but you know, it's just the scene of it. There's no time to be joking, in other words. Everything you do is for a meaning, at least for me, you know. On purpose.
How do you rate the importance of pop music, I mean, in the whole scene?
Well,
Do you think what you've just described, is it doing that for a lot of people?
I really don't know, because, like, I'd rather not, you know, maybe somebody else might know, because I haven't been paying attention too much to the pop scene recently.
Yes, why do you think you were successful in England? Why do you think it happened?
I really don't know, because I remember the first gig we did in England, people stood there with their mouths open, so I said to myself, damn, what happened, you know? Did we do good or do what, you know? And like, maybe it might have been the visual scene, you know? But we would like to think later on, maybe they could catch hold and dig how we can actually get some songs nicely together, like some slow, soft songs that we do. But every time they mention us, they show shock waves, you know, rah, and all this, and, you know, and crash, bang, wallop, you know.
What do you mean, people make films about
this? No, well, like posters, this and that, everything is big crash, bang, wallop, you know. That gets to be a hang-up sometimes.
What sort of, all right, well, I mean, that's an image, isn't it? I mean, what sort of image would you like?
Man, it's really hard to say, there you go. Very hard to say. It really doesn't make a difference. I really don't care. I just want people to listen to us. That's all, you know. They don't have to dig us. Just listen and give us a chance to be heard. Since it's the only way I can express myself personally.
What sort of music do you want to go on playing?
I like to chance it. What do you call it? Chance and just let it happen. Let it flow. All depends on how your mind is set for it. Quite naturally, we like to augment here and there. Like, Mitch has some beautiful ideas for some completely different sounds. And if we dig it, then we'll go into it, you know. But we have to like it ourselves, you know. Not necessarily following any trend or something.
What do you think about trends in music?
Well, it depends.
I mean, one of the great things about you and about the Cream, for example, I mean, I don't think I'm not the Cream. And one of the great things about you is that you just ignore all the trends, and yet you're successful.
Well, we're very lucky to be heard the first time. You know, there's so many groups now. It's like trying to start little things, but they're actually good guests, you know, and they're starving, and we're just lucky to be heard. So why join the bagwagon all the way and say, come on, oh yeah, the next thing out is Purple Bell Bottoms, so, you know, dive into those, you know, just perfect condition, you know. We could wear Purple Bell Bottoms, but we have to wear it our own way, though, you know.
Well,
I think I had these pants on for about
14 months.
Do you like wearing clothes that you wear? You
I love them, man. That's my scene, you know. I dig it. You know.
Where do you go to buy them?
Oh, sometimes we have friends, you know, like some of our friends make them for us. Jagger, what's his name? Little Jay, Jacob?
Jay,
Chris. Danny Fashion's made a lot of our things. Little girl named Jenny DeTaylor, you know, there's a lot of friends. But, no, go ahead.
I was going to ask if you're coming back to the touring. We were talking earlier, Mitch, about the fantastic sort of tour you're doing. Do you actually like pounding from place to place every day?
Man, it's really, well, especially if you don't get a chance to see. You know, like Mitch just came back from London not too long ago, because like it's really getting to be a scene where you don't know where you're at all. You remember places like maybe Arizona and Colorado, you know, you're grabbing on to any kind of remembrance you can have, because what is a tour, man, if you can't remember nothing or see anything or just, you know, see the skyline at least, or the city, what it looks like. Sometimes you go to the city at night, you know, you do press conference all in the daytime, play the gig that night, and leave again. You don't even know what the city looks like. You don't even know nothing about nothing. So how can you say, oh yeah, we was up in Chicago last week, you know? It's, you feel guilty almost saying that, you know? Because, you know, you say, wow, but were we? Did we see anything? You know? But that's part of the thing that we're in, so, you know, there's no use arguing or fussing about it.
Do you think there's a great difference between, I mean, we've tried quite hard tonight to get a decent sound. We're trying hard.
When is that?
The second game. But the second set. I mean, when you go into a recording studio, do you make a different kind of sound? I mean, are you aware there's a difference between one and the other? Or is it all the same?
Yeah.
For you, well, like, for you?
Well, like for me, sometimes we go through those motions in recording if we get on it. Like how we made Bowl is Love. Oh, guess what, man? We had so much fun, man. The real song is about 30 minutes long, and it goes into so many different movements. And then all of a sudden it comes out to Bowl is Love again. You say, oh, you mean we're still in that song? You know, but we was jamming it. It was nothing but a jam. And, oh, we had it so much together. It was about 30 minutes long, and we was really going into the thing with the arm and, you know, you just smash it up against the mics and all that. Just get certain sounds. You can rub it against the mic and go, you know. Oh, we really had it together nice. And Mitch had about a 10-minute drum solo in it. Noel killed everything with his 12-string, 8-string bass, was it? Had a little solo. Man, it was really out of sight.
Why do you do all these things? Is it just to get different sounds?
It's to entertain myself sometimes and to get different sounds, you know. Like you can hit up against with your ring, get a certain sound. You can scrape it across here and get it, you know, like that, you know. But like, we play so loud that you can do it like that, but with a pick, it doesn't really work, you know. Everybody does it with a pick, but you know, if you play too loud, it's nothing. You have to do it with your arm or your kneecap, whichever comes first.
What do you think of all the people who try and label and stick images on you?
Disappoint anybody, but, you know, it's really bad if they try to put you and say, well, that's their category or that's that category, you know. It's just bad for both of us, for the people and for me, you know. Because I might not want to be in that scene. It's as best as accept us the way we are, as we flow, you know. If they dig us that much, you know, they like us. It's great.
Do you get very sort of jumpy about criticism?
No, not too much. Because I know what I want to try to do, and I know what I'm trying to do. I have a good, very solid idea. So, you know, sometimes you get uptight, but quite naturally anybody does. You just let it pass, because you know exactly what you're trying to do or where you're at.
Okay, well, having said that, now describe what you want to do.
Well, there you go. It's very bad for me to do it in conversation, you know. It'll take like another LP or two or three, another this and that, you know, stage shows.
All right, all I'm trying to get at here is a sort of statement about what you're trying to do. I mean, you're obviously trying to do it through your LPs.
Right, but because singles are very hard work. Like, that's the only way I can say it. I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to say, you know. Trying to say to you, I know myself, but it's very hard to try to get on, you know.
That's where it changed anyway.
Yeah, because it might change tomorrow. Might change tomorrow, but it'll still have a solid thing, you know. Little things here, little fringes on the side, like you might want to get into that later on or get into that. But your solid ambition is, you know. And once you do that, then you still want something else to do, so, you know, that's my scene. I never will be satisfied, maybe happy, you know. There's always so much more to do in music.
talk
about your ambition, which I will move. Yeah, but, you know, I really, all I can say is this is a business part, like, you know, like, real, you know. Oh, I'm sorry, well, like, real.
Here's Row 42 of the Pop Film, door number 4148-3102, recorded on the 15th of March in Worcester, in USA, by Peter Nugent, P32, Row 42, cut.
To make some money, you know. So quite naturally we use some of that money to, like, later on, you know, as I grow old and all my hair falls out, my grandchildren be running all over my back, you know. And, like, I'll be trying to get some real estate together, you know, like, because human beings always have to have a place to stay and sleep, you know, and eat and so forth. So I like to get into that scene, you know. You know, but the real ambition, man, is, like, for us to be known, for us to be respected as musicians and, you know, like, songwriters and all that, because we're trying to get into that. You know, I mean, for this, they don't have to respect us as songwriters. It's like, dig our words and listen to what we have to say. You know, it's more than this music itself, you know. The words, we try to make our words flow in with the music. At least that's what I try to do, you know. Try to make it such a tight connection that, in other words, I'm talking to you, you know, or saying what I feel like saying that 3 or 4 minutes, whatever that certain track takes. The next track, then I'm talking to you again, only in another way, maybe. Another side, you know. Just to be respected, that's all. Because, like, beforehand, what was it? Everybody, like, said, oh, great, you know, you can get into something. I said, oh, man, I can't sing them. No, man, it's a good group. You haven't made, you know, blah. And all of a sudden, then we get a group together. Now everybody's trying to tell us how to play the drums, how to do this. Yeah, man, you'd be as good as Clapton, man, if you did your solo way up there. Bring it, you know. So I said, yeah, okay, brother. Yeah, okay, man. You know. Yeah, okay. Do I want to live anybody else's life? No, I want to live my own, you know, and play my own way, you know. Quite naturally, I learned from a lot of cats by listening and getting beautiful ideas from, like, you know, Elmer James, B.B. King, and Albert King, so forth, so on. Eddie Cochran.
Right.
Gene Vincent, you know, all these cats I used to dig. Bach, Mozart. Mozart really was a drag after a while. But, like, yeah, man, you're like, you get your inspiration from everything, and every note you make, that's yours. Quite naturally, it might have been around all over the place, you know, millions of years ago. But when you make it yourself, that's your note, and you really feel proud of it, you know. And, like, be respected from other cats, by the world, the music world, to be respected.
And that respect is obviously very important to you.
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to let it hang me up, though, if I don't get it. I go out on an island and listen to my beer grow and dig myself playing guitar. I think I'll do that, if nothing else happens.
What would you most like to do?
Oh, go on an island, dig myself, play guitar, and listen to my beer grow.
Sleep.
Maybe for about 2 months, and then come back, maybe.
Sleep.
Recharge my brain. There's anything left to recharge after this tour, man.
The tour been terrible?
No, it's been
very
really
hard.
It's been very, yeah. Too much. It's great, though. It's really out of sight. It's so surprising. I can't believe it, really. It's nice. Can you? Oh, this is like America, man. Oh, great. All these places at the Fillmore, I played there before with the Ike and Tina, you know, and the good old, you know, do you feel all right days, you know. And then also we play there as a group of ourselves, representing our own selves. It was such a good feeling, especially in your own home country. And I guess they feel the same way, right?
Yeah. Why did you come from America?
Well, like, I just explained it before. Like, I was in the village. Like, beforehand, I was playing behind other groups. Wasn't really trying to, you know, I really was very shy. You know, never to speak up. Never got paid and all this mess, you know. And then all of a sudden, Chas and Mike Jeffries give me the break when he takes me to England. And we got this fantastic group together. That's the way I look at it, man, you know.
Are you very shy?
Well, I don't know about all that, you know, that's besides, regardless. What time is it now?
It's
God, what a question.
Is it really?
Come.
This is Royal 44 of the Pop Film, job number 4148/3102, recorded by Peter Edwards using P32.
Okay, yeah. 141, take one. Okay, yeah. How do you think the second set went?
Lovely, very nice. I've enjoyed it. It was very good because we could hear ourselves. But it was good though, it was nice. I think it's. Most sets we do are very nice, don't we? To me, anyway.
What sort of particular things do you get out of the line for this group as opposed to the other groups that you've taken? What are you doing?
Money. sort of before I was with this group, I was working with professional groups in England which weren't quite there, you know. We were doing things, travelling around the country earning £30 a night and rushing about and doing nothing for 4 years. That's what I did. I was very broke and all these things. When I went to Germany for a year and played 80 hours a night, and the usual scene, you know, and earned £30 a week. But it was a good experience, though, anyway, I think.
Talk a bit about the difficulties of sort of starting up. I mean, everyone thinks that everyone makes a fortune immediately.
Oh, yeah. Well, you find... So you become popular and you think, we're earning so-and-so a night, and you think, oh, I'll be rich tomorrow. And you think, because once you become to this status, there's so many more expenses and things like that, you see. It's not as, if you do become big, it takes about a year before you start earning the money, I think.
Is it very hard to begin with, though? And also conditions you have to sort of suffer until you make it.
Well, even now we still suffer the conditions because you get to this state and all the time people saying you got to do an interview tomorrow, you got to do this tomorrow, you got to do that tomorrow. Can you talk to him nicely? Smile, please, click. Mm-hmm. All the time, really. And really, since we've begun, we've never really had them a proper holiday. I think we could do with it. Eh? Yeah. Because they say you got 3 days off, and then somebody says, oh, can you do this interview tomorrow? And you have to say yes. It's very hard, really, very hard. People think it's very soft, but it's very, very hard. Lots of people have toured with us, publicity people and, say, filming people, and they've died after a week. They just can't keep up. It's amazing. Because you get 3 hours sleep a night and 4 hours sleep a night.
Is it that much of a strain? What sort of effects does it have on you?
Tiredness. And no, I don't know. Well, we survive very well together anyway, so we work very hard, I think, harder than most groups. And when you get some sleep, you just grab it.
What things do you miss apart from sleep?
Sleep. Really, I can't really say because it's so involved. There's so many things you could say about what I miss, but there's nothing I miss really because this is my life anyway. And so.
Just tell us a few more things you miss before we run out.
I don't miss anything really because I'm still happy. I still feel very happy. I feel the same as people say, how do you feel to be in a big group? And I say, well, I'm the same still. And they say, what about all these girls and all that? Sort of chasing after and people asking me things. You say that anyway, don't you? If somebody asks you a question, you answer them.
Sorry. 142, take one.
There.
Go on where you left off. Talk about this sort of image, because I mean, this is one of the common...
Yeah.
People
say, how's it feel to be, as they put it, a star? And I think, well, I'm just me anyway, aren't I? I could never get big-headed, I don't think. I go home and I find that people are frightened of me now. They sort of... They see you on TV and all this crap and all that, and they think you're different, but you aren't really. And they think it's such a difference. They think you're different, and you aren't. Lots of people have interviewed us, and they think, oh, the so-and-so, so-and-so, big pop stars. And we talk to them, and that's it. They say, you're very nice. And I say, we're just normal people. Why think we're different? Just because we're successful, you know? And it gets to be a hang-up sometimes.
Like
what? Well, you get people saying, you just get people around you all the time. You go to a gig and you go into the dressing room, you want to relax before you go on. And there's all these thousands of people asking you these silly little questions like, what colour socks do you wear? And things. And I always associate that with, they should ask that about teeny bopper groups. I don't think we are, using a phrase. All this, I don't know. But I think we're just normal people and we talk as straight as we can. Don't we?
Right, well, do you hate when we can.
Do you hate all this sort of image?
No, it's lovely.
What are you complaining about?
What are we complaining about? Well, we're still normal, aren't we? We're still people, aren't we?
But I mean, do you dislike all the sort of publicist people who make you out to be something that you know you're not? I mean, is there a great amount of dishonesty?
Well, sometimes they say, you go to an interview and you get this person come in with a little notepad and a snappy flash. They say, I'm from so-and-so. They aren't really. They just got there just because they want to meet you. And they ask silly questions like, what are you going to do in the future? Who knows? The future's the future. You can't say what you're going to do in the future. And other times we've had interviews when people have walked in and said, I know what it means to do interviews with groups, so let's just relax and talk normally. And it's been nice, and you can talk and you can speak properly about what you think. And that's the way to do interviews and things like that. And photographs and what was that?
Do you like being photographed?
Yeah. Wouldn't you like being photographed? I'd like to be photographed. I like to be photographed, why not? That's the thing to be. It's good, but.
Do you really think you haven't changed?
Well, I've changed a bit. I find that I go home, the biggest thing I've thought about since I've been with this group, I go home to my hometown in England, and I've got all my old friends there, and they say things to me like, I went to Boulogne for a holiday last year, for a week, and they're so chuffed about it. You know, and they've got their little job, their little girlfriend, they're steady. And I say, well, I've just come back from New York and so-and-so and so-and-so. And they can't believe that I've been around that much. And I find that, to me, I've learnt much more about life than they have through travelling and meeting people. And, oh, I don't know what to say, really. But I've changed, haven't I? I'm still the same, really. Can't see the thing. Because the light's too bright. Ask me another question.
That was very good. You made your own punchline.
Can't.
1:43, take one. That's it. Yeah. Watch out, boys. Mitch, go on to talk about the sort of image business, which I think is very interesting. I mean, for example, I mean, there is this thing about...
Well, the thing that people build up, you know, yeah. It's kind of strange, you know, like, obviously other people have so much to do with it, like, suddenly you're reading the paper, like I came back, like, last time we came back from the States, for example, I brought a tear gas gun back, right, and I had it confiscated by the customs,
yeah.
And due to that, I got some press, and you're suddenly reading the paper, so-and-so pop star, right? You know, it's kind of funny to see that sort of thing in print. I think you do change an awful lot.
So we need it in New York.
You know, I think because you travel around so much, you know, you become very cynical about, well, at least I have anyway, But the thing is that, like, before I was working in groups anyway, like, I come from, like, the other side of the business. I worked being at drama school and that sort of thing. But, like, Noel was saying that when he goes home to, like, Folkestone, people don't accept him as they used to do. And I find, like, even like, although I was still working in the business as such, I find that people do change. Like, you make a special effort, maybe sometimes, to go out to try to sort of try to get contact with your old friends, you know. And you think, naturally, because they're in, like, entertainment, showbiz, you know, that you know, it's going to be the same thing. They're going to be on the same wavelength. And they clam up completely. You know, I know that we change, we're bound to, but other people make things very difficult for you sometimes, you know.
Do you resent, therefore, sort of the aura that goes with being a pop star?
Not at all, no. I think...
Talk about that for a moment.
I think you can become very, very introvert about things. Like, you know, I just went home to England for a couple of days, right? And I got back there, and my mother knows much more about the pop business than I seem to. Like, she says, I go back, she says, what do you think of so-and-so in the charts, and this, that, and the other? Now, I don't know half of these people, and I don't particularly want to, you know. Maybe I'm frightened of, like, you take influences from wherever you can, because no matter how bad a group is, or no matter how bad a drummer might be, you might have some little idea that you've never thought of. There's always something there, but I'd rather concentrate on doing my own thing and doing our thing in the group, you know.
What has working with this particular group done for you?
What has it done for me? It's given me freedom, complete freedom. I mean, like, I decided at a certain period of my life that I wanted to be a musician instead of anything else, you know. And it's very frustrating, because it's the one thing that I've never been trained to do. I've worked very hard at it, you know. But the thing is, it's important for me to be successful, like, financially, very quickly. Because, for example, this year, at the moment, I fancy coming over to New York, maybe, maybe late autumn, so I can go to study at music school. Now, it's important to me that I can afford to do that. Because, like, people say, oh, you make a lot of money. Sure, you know, but we've got the basic responsibilities the same as anyone else, you know, the taxman, the state, the rest of it. But even if we don't work, we've still got, like, this publicists, road managers, the rest of it to do. So I've got to be able to afford to do that. Like, you know, people don't honestly realise, like, I can't do without a bank clerk or a dustman or anyone, because I can't live my life comfortably without those people. But what they basically don't realise is that, I might be wrong about this, I believe there's a need for people like me. And like anyone connected with the pop business. Because whether you want to sit at home, you know, on your backside and watch television, or go to a movie or anything, you know, someone's got to have some kind of escapism. You know, the kids basically want to feel that it's something that maybe they're not. I don't know. You know, I can't analyse it.
Well, try a bit more about the way the kids think. How do you think the kids think about you? I mean, we were talking earlier about...
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing I've sort of noticed is that maybe, like, if we go into a TV studio, you know, like, we always sort of get a fair amount of attention from people, and that's very flattering. It has a lot of drawbacks sometimes, because you don't get any privacy. I mean, like, there is no break in between your life. Like, you know, if you're on tour especially, you have no private life. Like, if you're, alright, a hotel room, all we see is one hotel room and another hotel room and another. But really, like, you know, Englishman's home and it's his castle and that thing. But, you know, that is our home for that time. People don't respect that sort of thing. But it's very flattering on the other hand. But, you know, it gets a bit much at times.
I'm sure. Do you, you say you want to go to music school. I mean, you sound like you want to escape from the pop world.
No, not at all. It's just there is no infinity to what you can do. You suddenly realise that maybe you might want to sort of do another arrangement on something. And why call other people in to do it for you? You know, you suddenly realise that it's possible to write music, and you might have the ideas that you can't put down on paper. And there's nothing to substitute hard work. It's like anything else. Like, being in a group, to me, is comparable to being in the army. apart from haircuts, you know. Because, you know, you've got to have a certain amount of self-discipline, like anything else. I mean, there's loads of opportunities open to you. But, you know, you can make yourself up if you're not careful. Because I know that, like, before I was in a group that's successful, I used to look back and see people, like, suffering from nervous exhaustion and that thing. And you think, oh, they're trying to get out of a booking, they don't want to do this, that and the other. But I can look back over the past year and think of three or four times that I've honestly felt I just can't go on anymore. You know, you really have to be careful.
Oh, I'm going to stop there, because there's one more coming. Okay. You said.
Yeah.
144, take one. We talked slightly, but then we never quite got around to it, about this, one of the common assumptions about the pop world is this business of girls and sex, which I know is a load of rubbish, but not entirely.
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything about
that? Well, it's like anything else, I guess, you know, like, sure, it's, you know, it's there, but I mean, like, do you just want to be another sort of name in a diary, you know? I mean, that's what it boils down to, you know, it's like so-and-so one night, so-and-so the next night. But the thing is, the older you get, you suddenly look back and you realise that there's someone's daughters, and it could be your daughter. And you suddenly feel like, at one time, I used to sort of think, I've got no moral obligation or responsibility to the kids at all. And since I've come to America, people point out things to you on record that you didn't even know existed on your record. They get into things so much. And, like, basically, you know, you have got some kind of moral obligation to it. At least I think you have. But, you know, about the girls.
Yeah, do other people think this? I mean, or is it...
Yeah, well, but other people, like, they want to make out...
Who wants who? I mean, do you want girls or the girls want you?
Ah, there's no telling about that. No, it's like anything else. You know, if you have too much alcohol, you get drunk and you get sick. If you have too many girls, you get fed up with it, you know. It's like anything can be abused, you know. It's, I don't know, it's up to you. A lot of people join, it's like a lot of guys, you know, might want to become actors, or they might want to become anything. But it's nothing, you know, to substitute hard work. Basically, I've got my music, and no one can take that away from me. And that's something to get into, you know. Well, after a while, you just get bored of it, really. You know,
But does it happen a great deal?
Yeah. Of course it happens a great deal.
You get chicks knocking on the door at 9 o'clock in the morning. And they just say hello, and nothing else.
Yeah, you know,
and
like...
Because they want to meet you, and you're standing there completely shattered because you think it might be something important. And you've got your pyjamas on, and you're going... And they knock on the door and say, oh, hello. There's all these little young chicks. Like,
you know, it's...
I don't know what they expect.
That's very true. It's like this morning, you know. Like, I get phone calls from, like, maybe 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning. I mean, I don't know how people find out where you are or what hotel you're staying at. But they find out and they phone you up. I mean, like, I didn't get to bed till 5 o'clock this morning, which might be my own fault. But when you start getting phone calls, I mean, they've got nothing to say to you. They phone you up and they just say, who's that? And you say, oh, wait, it's so-and-so. And they just start giggling, you know, and like, you know, we're no different to anyone else. We've got to get our sleep, you know.
Huh.
That's
very, very good. Interesting.
Plus the fact...
145, take one.
Yeah, there are.
We're having a couple of minutes. Just go on to talk about the girls' scene a bit. Just tell me that story again about the time.
Oh, yeah, well, to be completely truthful about, you know, like, the girls' scene, the way I see it sometimes is like, you know, a lot of groups complaining, like, there are a lot of young girls that really have no business being out the streets, you know, or have no business knocking on your door at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, and all this. But then you must... Really, you know, I must really be frank and say that, like, if I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and I'm not, you know, I'm really sleepy, but then I open the door and see somebody that appeals to me, you know, or like, first of all, thinking of all, first of all, I say, what in the world is she doing here, you know, or what does she, you know, want, or something like that. I stand and she says, oh, maybe, can I come in? And I'm standing there and really digging her, you know, she's really nice looking, you know. To tell the honest truth, like, she's about 19, 20, or, you know, beyond the age of so and so. And so I said, oh, well, I'll probably stand there, and then there I go, I'll be biting into an apple maybe or something, you know. I tell that's the truth. That's the way I am, because, like, when it comes to that, you know, it's
really no big thing. It just,
no, it just happens, man. I just let it happen or let it not happen, you know. I can't put them all into one big pile and say, you little girls, go away, you know. Because, oh, that's right. I met a real good friend like that, you know, who just came around and said hi, you know. And she's still my friend. She's really a groovy girl.
I'm going to ask you a question I asked you earlier. I just want to do it again because there was all that racket going on in the background just in case we missed it. That, just playing on
it. I keep forgetting.
If you were asked to say, you know, half a dozen sentences, what you tried to do in your performance that we filmed tonight, what would you do?
What would I say, you mean? Oh, I wish I could explain. Really, I wish I could. But like, we've been lucky, we've been heard. We had a break of being heard and being noticed. And we're still playing it by ear. This way, you know, we still go on stage, play the way we feel. Like, for instance, Foxy Lady, which is a, like, what they call a sex song. Well, you just sock it just like the words go, you know. You just do it exactly. The words for the words saying, you know. I'd like to be with you, so forth and so on. So you get into the words and the music is, you know. Or you do a quiet one, One Cries Mary, then you can change, just like that.
Okay, well, let me put it in a slightly sort of less and easier way, perhaps. I mean, what does music, the music you play, mean for you?
Oh, it's like the very, very beginning of something that could be so much bigger, you know. Just give it, you know, like, I figure, like, if we just had, like, as the time goes on, we'll develop our style and we'll develop our own ideas of what we want to happen in music. Right now we're playing as three and we're playing exactly what we feel. We're hearing this and hearing that in our minds, and we try to put it down on tape. And I think later on this will blossom and keep blossoming, you know. And then we can look back on this sound and say, wow, is that us, you know. Not degrading the sound now, because I love it. I think it's great. It's ours. It's our own music. If it's ugly or pretty, then you caress your own thing.
Does that mean a very great deal to you, the fact that it is?
Yeah, it's just like a baby, just like having a baby and watching it grow and grow if you wanted to.
She's still very young.
Yeah. We don't know each other really yet, but we're getting to know each other now after 15 months.
Go on a bit more about what the music means.
Well, that's what it is. It's like something growing, and you can raise it up just to your own accord, because I don't care about starving anymore, to tell honest God truth. Like, I did it before, and I was like, I was happy, you know. And like, we're having it, you know, very nice now. But if we ever lose all that, I'm still going to be interested in music. Like, if they can't dig what we're trying to do later on, it's not going to really, really hurt me, because I'll still be doing it for my own self-satisfaction, you know. Because like I said before, it's your own child, you know. You bring it up the way you want, regardless of what other people say about it or whatever happens. You bring it up as best you can. That's the way I look at it. Because that's my scene, is music.
Do you get hurt when people don't understand that?
Yeah, quite naturally you're going to get hurt, you know, but you can always overlook it, because you must realize that you have to look at your music millions of different ways. You have to look at it the way a square would look at it. What I mean by that is like a pelican or a penguin type person, you know. And they have to look at it the way a wallpaper person might look at it. And you have to look at the way the cellophane socialites might look at it. But then you look at it your own way, which is going to bring it around anyway, so, you know, regardless of what happens, it's yours.
What do you mean by the cellophane socialite?
You know, the regular thing. You know, the people who go on vacations, wear beautiful Bermuda shirts, you know, with the short sleeves, fat bellies, 45 years old, 48 in the waist, you know. blue veins in the knees, and the kneecap showing, white socks on with brown shoes. And they say, oh, look at that right there. What's going on here?
And we're three.
Sorry, can't. Tony, can I have a key?
This is roll 45 of the pop film job number 4148/3102, recorded by Peter Edwards, using Pier 32 with Jimi Hendrix in Worcester, Massachusetts.
146, take one. Talk about what people think about you.
Well, like, I really don't know. I like to hear some of the conversations going on in the little dens here in San Francisco up until Maine, Portland, or something like this. I like to see what they really, or hear what they really say about us behind closed doors. Plus, you know, like the elderlies, they show their emotions which is great. You know, they say, ha ha, look at that, you know, which is great. You know, you can dig it for, take it for what it is. Because as we grow up, we'll probably be saying the same thing. Some of us will. But like, it's more of an open-minded generation that's coming around now. That's what's happening now. And like, they can understand that when you get like around this age, well, quite naturally anything that you didn't do yourself when you was younger looks strange to you, you know. So you can just, you know, there's no use really getting uptight about it. You can make up a few names for them, you know. But you don't have to sit up there across the street arguing with each other. Like, a lot of cats come and say, what are you, a girl or a boy? Or, you know, are you a group or what is this about? And we say, oh, well, we're a group and we're, you know, doing this and doing that, blah, blah. And next thing you just talk to them like a regular average person. And like, next thing you know, they want to come to your gig or come to see you perform or something, you know. Which is nice, you know. This is where you talk to people and the way they talk to you. So.
Do you find there's a great deal of prejudice still?
Well, I haven't seen too much myself. Before, mostly, you know. But then there you go again, you know. I really don't know what's happening when it comes to all that. I really don't know. I like to hear some people's conversations, you know.
Can I interject in that, sorry?
No, because we're just about to run out of time. Mm-hmm. We're almost now. So,
goodbye.
Tony Palmer is ready to pounce. He's edging forward.
Thank you very much. I would like to continue on, but give me 1 second to try to readjust this amplifier. I think it's falling to pieces already.
We'd like to do a number now of our first LP when we get together. Now. It's the one called Let Me Stand Next to Your Fire.
I think it may be. Hendrix guitar. Yeah. Pardon?
I have a slight bit of trouble. If you could hold on just for 1 second, everything will be alright, okay? Just 1 minute.
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, apparently it's a footplate thing.
In the first set, we didn't even have a PA, so you're lucky in the second set. Didn't even have a PA, which is a microphone system.
The black one. The other bloke, now.
We tried.
Fear is distorted to hell.
Oh.
Aha.
Yeah, back home again, okay. As I can't say before, we'll have to do a song called Let Me Stand Next to Your Old Lady. Let Me Stand Next to Your Fire.
You don't ever
much for listening, and thank you very much for staying for the next number. We'd like to, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'd like to try to do a little blues for you. It's on the, excuse me, it's a slow blues. I'm going to sing on the English How You Experience LP.
138, take one.
Pop film roll 43, roll 43 the pop film.
Man, not known.
Let's see if we can get into something anyway. We'd like to
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll see if we can guess what the name of this next one is, okay? Well, let's say thank you very much. We got one more tune after this, and thank you. We're staying this long.
Still looking very puzzled, yeah.
grandmother playing bass with us. And we had Mitch Mitchell, better known as Queen Bee, playing drums. And I was playing the radio all the time. But thank you very much for letting me play the radio. I think I'm driving. I'm going to have to say thank you very much for showing up tonight and staying with us this long. We hope we get a chance to come back here again. And, I haven't played this guitar too many times, so like I'd like to give you a chance to get the strings together, okay? Like we'd like to play one more song between that again. And like I said, it's a tune-up time song. I know it's a drag, but hell, you know, I gotta get it together.
Well, they've stopped, and there was a board on that. Here it goes again. Turn over, 1/4. Cut again. 1/40, take one.
I'd like to tell you, just in case anybody here goes to college, I'm slightly sharp, and I'm going to see if I can bring it down a little bit. I'm in the process of now bringing my G string down, as it were. Oh, hell, that's really out of tune there. It's the international anthem, English and American. Everybody knows the song. So if you can stand up and put your right hand across your left, or whatever you can find to put it across there. You know how Americans are. They can find something. And we like to begin. And if you know the words, just scream them out, because I forget every once in a while. You know the words of this here.
Hey! very much. Thank you. See you soon.
Thank you.
Coming. 140 take one, board on end.
This is the end of 140 take one.
Wait, that's it.
I think we've lost another microphone.